Do we matter, and why are we doing all of this to ourselves? We don't have external proof that we matter, so we construct it for ourselves to console our sense of fragility and insignificance. Profit-driven validation is trying to dampen our intuition that something is off, that we're poisoning ourselves with the way we have structured our society, and that there's anything beyond society itself. All of our accomplishments, desires, and goals are occurring within society. Our life is occurring within society, but death has no place within it. Our impermanence reduces us to nothing but the fact that we simply exist, and death is a reminder of our impermanence. Existing without a known reason is traumatic when you grow up in a civilization that relies on structure and permanence, and coping with death and our insignificance is nearly impossible when society is all we know. At the end of the Strokes album, The New Abnormal, the song Ode to the Mets reveals the true message of the album. The video begins with a retro electronic beat pulsing in a satisfyingly perfect tempo as the video slowly pans out from the screen of an arcade game. The electronic beat is overpowered by the song's intro, and we drift backwards through different places in time. The video becomes more and more abstract as the trophies on the shelf in a high school gymnasium become pieces to a chess game, and we drift backwards through the keyhole to a door that leads to a children's bedroom full of toys. The toy's animation switches back to the same style of the boy's imagination in the video for At the Door, and we glide through the electrical grid of an arcade game that is back in the original animation style of the video. We drift back through the deep ocean, expecting to perhaps return to the same clip from the beginning of the video, but then the video ends with the arcade game blinking Restart, and the video zooms out slowly to show the arcade game on the moon and Earth far off in the distance. In this music video, we get a sense of how trivial the things that we value really are, and how much more there is in the world outside of our own experience. The scene with the trophies on the chessboard, followed by the transition through the door to the children's room, reveals the game-like nature of society and emanates the feeling of watching our life go by without realizing that it is merely a brief period of time before an abrupt end. It's easy to forget that the structure we have built for ourselves was just to gain sanity in the void. It's easy to say, the fact that this one life is all the time we get in this world can be a very difficult thing to cope with. Our impermanence can also be a very difficult thing to accept. The end of our childhood, the end of our lives, and the end of humanity itself are all incomprehensible until we get there. It's only until we reach the end of a world that we were able to look back on all of its beauty from afar. This music video raises the question, how can we view our passions as meaningful when the reason for our existence is unknown? The transition from the scene with the child's room in the animation style of the boy's imagination, and then into the scene with the electrical grid, it seems to imply that there may be an immortal aspect to our imagination and the things we create. Vincent van Gogh is known most often for the fact that his art was not appreciated in his time. His legacy is largely defined by the way he viewed the world, and the way that his art communicated the beauty of individual perspective. Throughout his life, Vincent suffered from mental illness and struggled to understand his purpose even after deciding to dedicate himself to art. Theo, Vincent's brother and lifelong friend, financially and emotionally supported his work and thus had a great influence on Vincent's pursuit of art. Vincent wrote over 600 letters to Theo before he took his own life. Even during his stay in the asylum at St. Remy, he continued to paint and write to Theo. Dear Theo is an autobiography of Vincent van Gogh composed of the letters he wrote to Theo, and they tell the story of his life in the most honest, untouchable, and moving way possible. While he was living in Arles, and just before finishing his infamous painting of the sunflowers, Vincent wrote to Theo, My dear boy, sometimes I know so well what I want. I can do without God both in my life and in my painting, but I cannot, ill as I am, do without something which is greater than I, which is my life, the power to create. And if, defrauded of the power to create physically, a man tries to create thoughts in place of children, he is still a part of humanity. In a picture, I want to say something comforting, as music is comforting. I want to paint men and women with that something of the eternal which the halo used to symbolize, and which we seek to give by the actual radiance and vibrance of our colorings. Vincent believed that humanity will persevere not merely by means of multiplication or reproduction, but rather by means of the non-physical, abstract things we choose to dedicate ourselves to, as well as the effect that we have on one another. He dedicated his life to immortalizing the beauty that only he could see. Humans may die physically, but as to where our ideas and imagination go after we pass is something that we have only been able to theorize or philosophize about. What we call reality is the mutually agreed upon, finite premise that we have defined without getting into the infinite abstraction of perspective and zero-dimensional experiences. The physical world is in three dimensions, and we each generally experience the same sense of existence in that realm. However, it only encompasses what we can all reasonably agree upon. Stars come out at night, I have a body, etc. Our thoughts, ideas, and perceptions live in a zero-dimensional space. It's impossible to truly convey our experience of the world to others because the abstract aspect of it is entangled with the physical aspect. Vincent took his perceptions and ideas and transformed them into art, and in that way his mind lives on. From the Asylum of St. Remy, Vincent wrote to Theo, "I know well that healing comes, if one is brave, from within, through profound resignation to suffering and death, through the surrender of your own will and of your self-love. But that is of no use to me. I love to paint, to see people and things and everything that makes our life artificial, if you like. Yes, real life would be a different thing, but I do not belong to that category of souls who are ready to live and also at any moment to suffer. I am everything but courageous in sorrow, and everything but patient when I am not feeling well, though I have a rather good deal of patience in keeping to my work." When one realizes the true nature of their own mortality, one is subjected to both joy and pain. However much you let go and allow yourself to live defines the magnitude in which you will feel these two diametrically opposed elements of the soul. Vincent spent much of his life questioning his place in the world, and he understood that to truly live is to let go and allow oneself to drift through the thrashing waters of the soul's current, to gently glide amongst coral castles and feel the light of the sun seep through the surface of the water, yet to also get caught in a spiraling undertow that leads to just beyond the darkness where we thought the soul's current would end. He felt both joy and pain very deeply. Finding a way to heal, as Vincent understood it, requires an unwavering acceptance of pain and relinquishment of oneself to the soul's current. Even though he found this extremely difficult and suffered a great deal during his lifetime, his art was an outlet for him to create something transcendent of himself.
Hi, this is Amanda, and I'm going to show you how I did this crocheting. Well, in fact, it's actually not crocheting. This is finger knitting. And very simple.
I often hope that other people see how beautiful the sky is, but no one else seems to be looking up when they're walking to class. I often wonder if other people feel music in the same way that I do. If I close my eyes and allow the sounds to seep into my brain, I start to sink and even forget that I have a body for a second. A song feels like its own universe, although it doesn't really have any dimensions that we know how to define. Sometimes I get an idea so strange that I have to record myself talking about it just so I don't forget it. Or sometimes I get an idea for a doodle and I have to scribble it down on a napkin so I don't lose the visual of it in my head. I often wish that I had something I could be a genius at. Maybe if I had something to wholly dedicate myself to, I wouldn't wake up and feel disoriented by the mere fact that I exist and have a body, yet can't tell you why. I came to college because the only gift that I know for certain that I have is curiosity, and I'm not sure yet what to do with that gift. The ironic thing about it is that it's so painful to know that there are things I don't know dangling right in front of my face, yet it's just as painful for me to try to pick one thing to learn about, because picking one means dismissing the rest. I'm currently studying electrical engineering, but every day I think about all the other cool things I could enjoy studying as well, like math or philosophy or writing or art. It feels sort of like Pandora's box, but instead of just one box, it's an infinite amount of boxes, and they all have something incredible rather than evil inside. I used to think that my struggles in school were because I was just a visual learner, but a few months ago during my first semester at the University of Minnesota, I got diagnosed with a learning disability in reading fluency and phonological memory. My brain isn't wired to decode words, written or verbal, like it's expected to. The best way that I can think of to describe it is, if you think about reading or listening to instructions like eating the words, then most people eat them left to right, no problem. However, for me, it's like the words are all mixed up into a soup, and then I have to drink the soup and figure out what's being said, but while the words fill the soup faster than I can drink it, and then the sentences start to spill out onto the floor. The zero-dimensional space in my mind, where my thoughts and ideas live, have pseudo-dimensions that allow me to have an incredible visual reasoning skill. But there's no sufficient space for decoding words. I remember taking the call from the woman who conducted my assessment and crying for longer than I'd cried in a long time. It wasn't that I was sad that I had a learning disability. It just hurt to think about all the times I felt crazy as a kid and didn't know why. I couldn't properly tell time until at least 2 years after we were supposed to have learned it. I didn't understand algebra until my mom found a tutor that taught visually and kinesthetically. I was told I was smart but just slower than most. I was told that my art was beautiful but strange. I struggled with mental health throughout middle school and high school, but was called a happy kid. It seems like the things people have to say about my mind always come with a contradiction or inconsistency or even a flat-out inaccuracy. My second grade teacher told my mom that I had big feelings, but now I get to use the words learning disability instead. The key word is disability. I'm only considered disabled because my mind is not like most people's. If everyone else's mind was like mine, then I would be considered average. Maybe the term learning disability is really a way of making it easier for other people to empathize with me by giving them a heuristic for understanding why I'm different or slower at certain things. The context of society in regards to my mind is what highlights my struggles, and I often wonder, am I even cut out to do the things I want to do within society? I just hope I can figure that out before my time is run out.
It's about 40 feet. So, I'm going to teach you how you can do finger knitting too. I hope you learn how to do it, and I hope you like how to do this amazing feature, how to do finger knitting. Thank you for watching this wonderful episode by Amanda Foster. Amanda Nicole Foster. Try this at home.
The album Dark Side of the Moon by Pink Floyd uses the dark side of the moon and the illusion of light on its visible surface as a metaphor for darkness and insanity. This album presents the idea of two kinds of insanity: insanity by social conformity, or insanity by realizing the damage of social conformity and the futility of trying to help others realize the same. The duality of these two equally painful perspectives is what brings us all together. Humanity's true nature can be defined by the inevitable insanity that our existence brings, and by the illusion of the light side of the moon that is our own perspective of the world. Every new realization that we have about reality proves it to be even more vast and fragile. Thus, the more we learn about our existence, the less we really know about it. We discover two unknowns for every realization that we have, and the more we learn, the further into the void we venture. The song Great Gig in the Sky was originally to be called the Religion Song. In the intro, a man says, "I am not frightened of dying. Anytime will do.
I don't mind. Why should I be frightened of dying?"
suddenly the listeners are hit by the sublime, soulful vocals that soar over the instrumentals of the song. The operatic tone of the vocals seemed to be yelling or crying out, mimicking both the mental anguish and inner peace that one can feel about death. The idea of an afterlife, or in other words, another gig after a last show, allows us to accept the end of our world and gives us a sense of purpose that we didn't have before. However, while there is no proof or meaning to our existence without the idea of an afterlife or transcendence, there's also no proof of an afterlife or transcendence. We are still left in the void, and madness is inevitable for sentient beings. But we can still find beauty in the process. In our search for meaning or evidence of such, we have found art. In the process of trying to decipher this overwhelming and confusing experience, we have discovered expression and things to create. On our way to the heavens, we will have reached the sky and watched our world quietly slip away.
What color are you painting his paws?
Black.
Why are you painting his paws black?
Because I can do it whatever I want.
You want to do it whatever you want?
Yeah.
Are you painting it by the numbers or are you doing it your way?
My way.
Because is your way the best?
Yeah.
Yeah? You're a silly girl. Do you like horses?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are they your favorite?
Yeah.
All right.